The Breakfast Huddle replay from Money FM 89.3.
Just last week, the Enterprise 50 or E50 Awards was held at Resorts World Convention Centre. The E50 Awards are jointly organised by the accounting organisation KPMG Singapore and the Business Times, and also sponsored by OCBC Bank.
So the awards is now in its 25th year, and it aims to recognise local businesses for their accomplishments, innovative spirit and sustainable business models. To mark the 25th anniversary of the awards, for the first time, a special digital economy honor was given out to a business identified as what they call a future billion-dollar company.
Yeah, it's one of those companies that's right here. You've never heard of it, but it's doing really well. MDAC, a local fintech startup, received the accolade for its highly scalable and profitable business. MDAC's vision is to create a world without currency borders by shining light onto the opaque world of currency trading that isn't accessible by actual business and individual needs. And that brings the best of the East Coast, as in Wall Street, to the West Coast, the real world.
Interesting. Well, like any other companies, MDAC has gone through its fair share of highs and lows. And we're going to find out a little bit about the challenges that MDAC has faced. We have with us in the studio this morning, Richard Koh, Chief Executive Officer for MDAC. Richard, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, great to see you. First of all, congratulations. What an accolade. It's the Digital Economy Award at Enterprise 50. It's a really special award. It marks their 25th year. How does it feel?
We were quite humbled by the award. We didn't expect to win it, but I think it's a testimony of more good things to come, not just from us, but from the entire tech sector. And Singapore really deserves more of such good names out there. And we hope that we could be one of the first few to help to open the floodgate to remind what has been a golden era some 30 years ago. And hopefully that era will be coming soon.
Richard, I'm curious, could you tell us about how you got nominated? What's the story behind this?
We read about this award in terms of this special inaugural during one of the press release. It was by DPM Inc. And we thought this would be really interesting to cap a year 2019, which happened to be our 10th year of founding. One of the things that we've always joked about MDAC is that we're one of the fintechs you've never heard of, because we are B2B, business to business, and we tend to be behind the scene. So many of the products and solutions that we do today, you're probably using it, just that you don't know that it was the Singapore company that was behind it.
Okay, what are these products?
Yeah. How does it work? How are we using it every day?
So a large part of our business for the last 4 years has been around the digital economy, right, on all the e-commerce flows that's coming out of China, selling to the rest of the world. So we're the guys who are behind it to help make it local. So anything that's RMB, USD, you're able to buy in almost like 33 countries, whether it's Sing Dollar, Japanese Yen, Aussie, Swedish Krona, you name it, you have it. And this came from a very basic hypothesis we had at the beginning of the founding of the company, which is that price certainty leads to commitment in transaction. If you're sure of something, you tend to be more willing to do it. And we wanted to test that theory or the hypothesis in the e-commerce space. Because in the first 6 years of most of this e-commerce platform, like the Amazons or the AliExpress of the world, you tend to be only able to see the prices in USD. And you use your local credit card to pay for it. And it was your card scheme, your issuer, your acquirer that does all the conversion. So in a way, you're buying something without knowing the price until 48 hours later it hit your online statement, which is really strange. Why would you be buying something that you do not know the final price? So we aim to change that by making everything local, home currency pricing to the customer. And that has actually helped to increase sales by almost threefold, because there's the phenomena in online shopping, especially called shopping cart abandonment. If today you were to go online and check any of your online accounts, chances are your shopping cart is not empty. There's something left over from the last time you're on, which meant that you didn't make the purchase and the platform lost the sales. So after doing home currency pricing, we changed the whole thing around.
Okay, I'm not going to lie. I'm someone who loves to do online shopping, and I am sure that somewhere I have touched that ecosystem. So what I wanted to ask you was about your website. So what's quite interesting is when you log on to MDAC's website, and anyone can have a go at this, please don't do anything like this while you're driving, but if you're at home, you can certainly have a go, and you see these numbers ticking over. This is quite a big number. It's just under 17 billion Singapore dollars at the last check. What am I actually looking at when I see that?
Those numbers in particular relate to sales volume that we have helped to transact since the beginning of 2016. So coming to about 4 years now. So the almost 17 billion Sing dollar is the total transaction value. Otherwise, in the e-commerce world, it's called GMV, gross merchandise value. And the number at the bottom are the actual physical dollar savings that online shoppers have gained since the last 4 years. And on the right-hand side are the numbers that our merchant partners, the platform, have gained as extra risk-free revenue stream. Yeah. So everybody wins.
So just in terms of shopper savings right now, it's on just under 138 million Singapore dollars. So that gives you a sense of how big this is.
I'm curious, Richard, in terms of, I'm sure you're profitable.
Yes.
What is the business model? How are you making money then?
It's quite simple. So if you look at a typical online offline transaction through your credit card, as long as it's cross-border, you tend to pay roughly 4% all in fees or spreads.
Okay.
And we compress that to 1.25%, and we share the 1% of that 1.25% with our platform partner. So we only keep 25 basis points.
Oh.
So the online shopper or the customer or the merchant will save somewhere just under 3%, and the platform makes 1%. And we take 25 basis points for doing all the risk management, the processing, everything.
Okay. So how profitable are you exactly? Because I think you're quite a standout story when it comes to fintech, because they often don't make money at the beginning.
Yes, well, everyone is talking about a path to profitability. We were fortunate that for the full year financial year 2018, we were already full year profitable. I can even share some numbers. It's on the Accra.
Anyway. We love numbers. Go ahead.
You pay $5, you get a number. So I'm just going to give it to you. So last 2018, processed 6.6 billion of flows on a revenue of 43 million and a net profit after tax of more than 6 million.
Alibaba and Alibaba's interest in MDAC. Perhaps you can give us some background, Richard.
Actually, it was Ant Financial, which led our Series C investment back in November 2015.
Okay.
So, strictly speaking, it wasn't Alibaba, it was Ant Financial.
Right. So, by association, Alibaba, in that sense.
Yes. And that was actually a pivotal moment because for the first 6 years of our company, we were focusing almost entirely on the stock exchange business.
Okay.
And we realized that we need to pay the bills, test our hypothesis, and there was an opportunity for us to try something different in the real world. And we did a hackathon that lasted about 4 days during the Chinese New Year period in 2015. Mm-hmm. And out came the product called Aladdin, which changed our little world.
That apparently is your most innovative platform. Tell us a little bit more about it.
In the FX world, foreign exchange world, most of the models, the traders, the hedge fund, they typically look at foreign exchange as a supply-side problem, meaning everyone's trying to price it looking at the future, like a crystal ball. But really, no one can know the future. Black swan events will happen and you'll throw the entire model out of whack. And everyone's trying to guess the price in the next 1 minute, 1 second, 1 day, 1 week. And 60% of the time you can get it right, you're considered very good. We decided to look at it from the other way, which is to look at the demand side. And if we know for using back data testing that in a particular country, there by the currency, what is the next 24, 48, 72 hours of demand, and we can predict that, we can hedge that position. And therefore, we are able to guarantee a price much lower than what a traditional risk function in a bank could do. And we can do it by a factor of 5-10 times better.
You've recently received fresh funds from a pre-Series D equity round. So funds from South Korea's Samsung, Japan's Nippon Telegraph and Telephone, so NTT. It means it brings your valuation to some 500 million Singapore dollars. These are huge names. How have you managed to get such big names behind you?
Those numbers are pre-money. So post-money is a question mark.
Right.
But actually, other than being profitable 2 years back, we still have sufficient cash and we're not burning. So theoretically, we have an infinite runway. So why did we raise more money? There are a few reasons. One of it is in order for us to diversify our revenue stream, you need to work with incumbents. Who are the strong players in each of the ecosystem. So for us to enter into Japan and Korea, we have to work with the big guys there. And this is why the investment took place. In other words, in exchange for entry into the ecosystem, we took some new money, which we actually didn't really need to have. But now that we have a sort of a war chest in excess of 50 million, next year, 2020, will be an interesting year because there'll be a lot of headwinds in the global economy, and some startups may have a liquidity crunch. This will present M&A opportunity for us to be able to do something with the war chest.
Oh, that I'm curious now. So do you have your eye on anything? What might you have your eye on?
We're currently actively looking at six specific companies. Half of them are actually our client. So we are looking at vertical integration. That means getting closer to our client and to our client's client to see whether can we help them in addition to just solution, but also capital. And in addition, we're also trying to diversify by broadening our width to see what are the ancillary companies out there that could allow us to attach our solutions to it in order to address a new market. So we're looking both at horizontal and vertical M&A.
And these six companies you mentioned are from South Korea and Japan?
No. They are from Southeast Asia.
Southeast Asia. But your move into South Korea and Japan, very interesting when it comes to the tech space. Are you anticipating any challenge moving in? Why specifically did you decide on these two countries in North Asia?
We were looking at a ASEAN plus two. So ASEAN is definitely our home base, and we intend to be the first port of call for anything that's cross-border. And many of the tech companies, large and small out there, which does a cross-border, chances are behind the scene, part of the solution might have come from MDEC. Just that due to NDA, we do not disclose them. But we felt that there's a lot of inflow and outflow between the two countries in North Asia, particularly Korea and Japan. So we set our sights on that. Part of the reason is also my CTO, who's employee 002, he's from Japan. And we have, therefore, a natural local advantage.
Right. Well, these things make a big difference, don't they? What is really fascinating me about your story is that you're one of those unusual fintech companies that's become profitable very quickly. But you said that for 6 years of your business, it wasn't so great, and then you had to pivot. What was your biggest lesson as a result of going through that period in your history?
Well, I would say we pivoted in coming out with a new solution, but we didn't pivot away from our original plan. Because many of us came from the FX market. We spent our entire career, and we wanted to really change the world in that space. We felt it's very opaque. We want to shine a light to the real world. And that has never, it's not something we have given up. Just that in order for us to last longer, some sales cycle could be very long, could be 10 years, 15 years. We need to be there when the market is ready for us. In a tech company, there's only two circumstances or scenario. One is either you're too late or one is you're too early. If you're too late, then basically you fail. If you're too early, you must have staying power. And we decided that we want to stay on because we realized we were maybe a decade too early for the original product. But that product is coming soon to a screen near you. So hopefully after 10 years, we are able to finally launch that.
What do you do in that scenario? You just simply hold out and you know, wait to launch the product?
No, in 2012, like all companies and startups, we survived on cash. And 2012, October, we ran out of cash. Sure. So actually, the company died once. But at the time, we told all the staff that, you know, your payroll is going to be the last one next month. We don't owe you money. But those who want to stay on, you're welcome to. Those who want to leave, we understand. And about a dozen of the core members stayed on. So we persevered through about 11 months of no pay. And it was very, very tough because in order to keep the lights on for ourselves, in order for the banks not to call back our mortgage, we had to borrow money without a salary to pay employer and employee share of CPF just to give the sense that our income was flowing through. But actually, it wasn't. There was nothing coming through. It was also that time that we had met new believers, who new angels who decided to say, despite the current state, looks like a bottomless pit, I'm going to top it up, give you something so that you can last a little bit longer. And some of them became good friends, and one of them became my COO recently. Called him out of retirement after an illustrious career. Yeah.
And now look at you. Wow. You're winning a prestigious award, a special award. Where do you go from here? With everything you've learned, everything you've been through, you've turned it around. What's next?
It's still a long journey. We are keeping our options open. Certainly an IPO could be one. It could also be, if the opportunity presents itself, that we could be part of something even bigger and more exciting. And if we could be that important, sort of the missing piece, we're happy to consider that. But more importantly for the team, we weren't looking at it from a personal level. In other words, we're never looking at what is the net worth, what is the valuation. All of those numbers are not important. What's important is that we felt that the community here has given us a lot of support, especially from the government, all the agencies. And there hasn't been a lot of very high-profile local startups that made it via an IPO. And we hope that by doing what we can, we could help a new generation get past that important gate. So that's all that we were excited and motivated about. Not for personal, but more for the community at large.
Richard Koh, Chief Executive Officer for MDEC. Richard, congratulations again on winning the Digital Economy Award at Enterprise 50 Awards. Thanks for sharing your story. Good story. Have a great week ahead.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.